Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm Susan Franzen, your host for today. Thank you for listening in. We start this snowy Veterans Day program with 10 minutes from Digital Dennis.
Thanks very much. As always, it's great to be back with you on this second Monday in November. Elections made big news around the state last week. Here in Ames, as we reported on Friday, there was no clear winner in the race for the city's 4th District Ward Council seat. Iowa State University student Rachel Junk fell just short of the 50% plus one vote needed for victory against incumbent Chris Nelson. But absentee ballots will continue to be counted until tomorrow. Incumbent council members Bronwyn Beatty Hansen and Tim Garten ran unopposed, and they were reelected. In the race for Ames School Board, incumbents Elisa Franzen and Alan Bierbaum were reelected, along with newcomers Sabrina Shields-Cook and Michelle Linkitis. In Des Moines, the mayoral race will go to a runoff after incumbent Frank County and challenger Jack Hatch failed to secure a majority of votes in last Tuesday's election. County received 43.5% of the vote. Hatch received just under 43%. Still in the world of politics, Republican U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina was the keynote speaker at Friday night's annual Lincoln-Reagan dinner in downtown Des Moines. He called the House of Representatives' impeachment inquiry into President Trump a joke and said Democrats are not looking for the truth. Speaking of Democrats, an aide to Democratic presidential hopeful Tom Steyer resigned last week after word that he had privately offered campaign donations to local Iowa politicians in exchange for endorsing Steyer's bid for the White House. Also last week, word that this year's late harvest and unseasonably chilly autumn have increased demand for propane, forcing suppliers across the state to ration the fuel used by farmers to dry their grain and by rural homeowners to heat their houses. Last week, less than half of Iowa's corn crop was in bins, 11 days behind where the harvest usually is this time of year, and nearly every bushel of corn needed to be dried. In Ames last week, a man was arrested on first-degree murder charges after police said he stabbed a roommate multiple times during an argument in their West Ames apartment. 55-year-old David Sean Hunter was arrested at the apartment he was sharing with the victim and another person in the 1200 block of Walton Drive. The victim was identified as 37-year-old Christopher Swalwell of Ames. There was also word last week that the man accused of killing University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts could give either written or verbal testimony this week. Court records show that 25-year-old Christian Bahena Rivera will testify at an evidence suppression hearing set to begin Wednesday. A judge will decide after the hearing in Poweshiek County what evidence will get to be presented to jurors at Bahena Rivera's upcoming trial. Also last week, a Story County jury found an Ames man guilty of a hate crime, harassment, and reckless use of fire. Police said 30-year-old Adolfo Martinez had stolen a pride banner hanging at the United Church of Christ on 6th Street in Ames and burned that banner. Martinez could face 15 years in prison. Meanwhile, a man was arrested last week for allegedly burning a pride flag at the oldest gay bar in Des Moines. Daniel Jonathan Rosemark is accused of tearing down one of the LGBTQ banners at the Blazing Saddle and setting fire to it. Also last week, an Iowa health coach accused of defrauding more than 100 people out of millions of dollars by getting them to invest in a gym and fitness program was sentenced to more than 6 years in federal prison and ordered to pay more than $8 million in restitution to his victims. Mark Allen Blankenspor of Pella had been accused of orchestrating a multi-million dollar Ponzi-like scheme. He had told people they had a chance to make money by investing in a gym concept, telling them he would provide them with a 40% return. Meanwhile, an Iowa fire chief was arrested for driving an ambulance while he was drunk. Thomas Michael Launderville, who is Grand Junction's fire chief, was arrested after a police officer heard an ambulance driver slurring his speech after a call in Grand Junction. The driver, identified as Launderville, admitted he had imbibed several beers before driving. A test showed his blood alcohol concentration was more than twice the legal driving limit. Grand Junction is a city of about 800 people 60 miles northwest of Des Moines. And in Des Moines, a judge denied unemployment benefits to a city police officer who had been fired after officials determined she had lied when she claimed she'd been struck and injured by a vehicle driven by a woman fleeing a traffic stop. The case involves the firing of Des Moines officer Lourdes Haydenfelt. Officials used her body camera footage to determine that she had not been struck by a car, as she had claimed in a police report. Meanwhile, the Iowa Supreme Court decided to step into a legal battle between the state and environmental groups over whether enough is being done to keep hog manure and other farm pollutants from tainting rivers that provide central Iowans with drinking water. The court's order halts proceedings in a lawsuit filed by Iowa Citizens for Community Involvement and Food and Water Watch and orders lawyers to file documents within 2 weeks so the court can start reviewing the case. And the strangest court story of the week involved a man who had been convicted of murder and who had been rushed from the Iowa State Penitentiary to the hospital 4 years ago, where his heart was restarted 5 times. That inmate, Benjamin Schreiber, claimed his life sentence was fulfilled during his short-lived death and that he had overstayed his prison time by 4 years. Speaking of courts, or at least courthouses, voters in Warren County last Tuesday rejected the county's plan to spend an additional $3.5 million to build a courthouse and justice center on the Indianola City Square. The referendum needed 60% voter approval to pass. It received 55%. The defeat raises questions about the future of the courthouse project. The old courthouse was torn down as the county prepared to build its replacement, but the project has been halted since this past July, when construction bids came back $7 million over budget. On the education beat, word last week of a new agreement that would let students obtain a University of Northern Iowa bachelor's degree without leaving the Des Moines Area Community College's Des Moines campus. That agreement establishes a partnership under which participating students would complete 2 years at DMAC and then spend 2 more years working on a UNI bachelor's degree. And in another education-related story, the Iowa Supreme Court ruled that Coe College in Cedar Rapids cannot sell paintings by famous Iowa artist Grant Wood, paintings that had been donated to the college. In the ongoing saga of the people who used to organize the Des Moines Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa, but who resigned to start their own bike race, RAGBRAI's former ride director said last week that third-party mediators are communicating with him, trying to mend fences with the Register. Stay tuned. On the development beat last week, word that the city of Bondurant would offer a 6-year tax abatement for what is believed to be a future Amazon fulfillment center. Amazon and city officials have refused to confirm whether the online retailer is behind a massive warehouse project near Northeast Hubble Avenue, and the company is not named in city documents. Under the tax abatement plan, the city would waive 80% of property taxes on new construction in the first year. In another story, word that a developer had bought the long-vacant Northwest Community Hospital in Beaverdale and planned to turn it into condominiums with ground-floor retail space. Also last week, word that the group that wants to bring a professional soccer team to Des Moines also envisions a surrounding mixed-use development with retail businesses, restaurants, and offices. The project, spearheaded by Krauss Group Real Estate, would cost $95 million and occupy 13 acres south of downtown Des Moines. Those plans included a 6,000 to 8,000 square foot stadium, a street level plaza, a 500 car parking garage, and a 5-story mixed use retail and office building. The soccer stadium would be home to a USL Championship soccer club that could launch in Des Moines by 2022. It's not clear how the stadium would be paid for. And there was word last week that Drake University had taken the wraps off plans for a $3 million renovation to its School of Journalism. The university will use money donated by the Meredith family, descendants of the founder of the Des Moines-based media company Meredith Corporation, for the renovation. There was also word that Allegiant Air will make Des Moines its newest base. The company will invest $50 million in Des Moines, bringing in 66 employees and expanding the destinations it serves from the Des Moines airport. Meanwhile, the Ankeny School Board delayed a vote on a new boundary map for its southern elementary schools 2 weeks after board members heard the concerns of parents who live in areas affected by the proposed changes. The district wants to amend its boundary map for its south feeder system as it prepares to open its new elementary school next fall. In the wild and wacky world of college football this past Saturday, Iowa State University lost to the University of Oklahoma 42-41. The University of Iowa lost to Wisconsin 24-22. But it wasn't a completely lost weekend because the University of Northern Iowa defeated Indiana State 17-9. And one more note from last week, a story that an enterprising Minnesota college student who drove to Iowa every weekend to buy hundreds of Krispy Kreme donuts, then sold all of it to his own customers in the Twin Cities area, had been warned by the donut giant to stop doing it. 21-year-old Jason Gonzalez would drive 270 miles to a Krispy Kreme store in Clive, Iowa, pack his car with up to 100 boxes of donuts, with each box carrying a dozen Krispy Kremes, then drive back north to deliver them to customers in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. But Krispy Kreme told him his sales created a liability for the company. There have been no Krispy Kreme stores in Minnesota for 11 years. But there's a happy ending to this story, at least for Jason Gonzalez and his customers. The Krispy Kreme company eventually said last week that Gonzalez could work with the company as an independent operator. And when he starts up again, the company will donate 500 dozen donuts. Now I think we can all agree That is a very sweet deal indeed. And that, my friends, is your very sweet summary of the past week's news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, and I'll be right back here on Local Talk this coming Friday with news from around Ames. And this time, I'll be reporting from Disney World in Florida. Yes, that's why I'm sometimes known around these parts as Digital Dennis. Have a great week.
Thank you, Dennis Hart. This is KHOI Community Radio, and as usual, we ended the news from Dennis with a piece of music. Since this is Veterans Day, I looked for a patriotic song from World War I and from Irving Berlin. I discovered the song you just heard, Your Country and Mine, recorded from the original piano roll played by Irving Berlin himself. With that, I'll turn to the weather. I'm sure you've noticed the snow this morning, so it's a good time to hear from Keith Morgan, Director of Emergency Management, as recorded by Stephanie Bates, DJ host of The Love of Music, which airs on Thursday evening at 10 p.m. She also volunteers in many other ways at KHOI. We're happy she's contributing to Local Talk. Thank you, Stephanie.
This is Stephanie. I have Keith Morgan here from Story County Emergency Management. Keith's one of our regular guests. He's here to talk about getting ready for winter, which I'm not excited about, but it's inevitable. So you want to give us some tips on what we need to be doing?
Sure. Old man winter's just sitting out there ready to smack us pretty soon. And I thought I'd bring that up, even though people are cringing out there, and talk about a few ways to make sure that everybody can be safe as we move into the winter time. One of the first things is we'll start first inside the house, and then we'll move on out to cars after that. So, obviously, you want your furnace to be working. That's what's going to keep you warm. But that furnace can also be a place where you have some danger, and that danger is carbon monoxide. Have you ever heard of carbon monoxide?
I have. I really don't know much about how you would even know if you had carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yeah, sure. Carbon monoxide is a byproduct of heating, burning things out there. And one of the primary ways to know if you have it, since it's a clear, odorless gas, is to have a carbon monoxide detector. They're not that expensive. You can plug them on into a electrical outlet for some of them. Some of them can be hardwired into your house. But that is the primary way, because when you start to have problems with carbon monoxide, it's going to give you a headache, it's going to give you dizziness, and you're going to have some nausea. And what do most people think of when they're experiencing that?
That you have the flu.
Right, and that's why it's so insidious, that people will just think that they have the flu. They'll hunker down, stay in that environment where the carbon monoxide is, and eventually it can lead to death. I had an uncle that they were running a generator, and those fumes were coming inside the house. And if one of their kids hadn't come by and recognized that it was carbon monoxide poisoning, they probably would have died, and they had to spend some time in a hospital for it. So it's one of those things that you need to be aware of. The detector is probably your front line of defense, and also getting your furnace checked regularly. Now, some people at times think that they can use grills or other alternative heating sources, and that's not safe because, again, that's going to produce that carbon monoxide. It's not going to be properly vented, and it can be a real danger to you. So don't do that. If you're having problems with your heating, get it fixed or go stay with somebody that does have an approved heating source for them.
I have a question. What if it's so cold out but I want to grill? I would guess is it safe to grill in my garage? And I guess you're going to tell me it's not, even maybe with the garage door open?
There's all sorts of levels of safety, and it goes beyond just the carbon monoxide. You're usually going to have things like gas cans and stuff like that sitting inside your garage. So it's probably not going to be a safe way to do it. Just move it outside, bundle up. If that steak is that important to you, go ahead and put on the warm clothes and do it where it's safe and it's not likely to catch your house on fire, because then you'll really be cold after that. You know, another thing is a lot of people will use smaller space heaters because They don't want to heat up the whole house, or the furnace isn't working as well. And that's okay, but make sure the equipment that you're using is safe. If it's from your grandmother's house, it's probably not up to the specs that you need. For instance, it's probably not going to have a tip-over protection, which is if the unit gets knocked over onto its side, it'll automatically shut off. Well, the older ones don't have that. So your dog walks by, or you just happen to bump it and it falls over, you don't notice it. Next thing you know, you might have a fire in your house. And also think about what's around that. If there's curtains, you want to move it away from that so that the curtains don't blow into it and catch it on fire. But along with your CO detector, make sure that your smoke detectors are working, so that you have them and that they're working. And as you were mentioning before we came in here, when do you check your smoke detectors? We encourage everybody, every time you fall back or spring forward, go around, replace the batteries in your smoke detectors, and check to make sure that they're working. Now, me, when I cook, I automatically check to make sure that my smoke detectors are working about once a week the way that I cook. But have you ever heard of people's pipes freezing?
I have.
Do you know how you can try and prevent that?
I actually don't.
You're lucky. I'm in a newer house, but it's on the northwest-facing walls where the pipes run through. It can freeze up, and the secret is keep just a little trickle of water running when we have those extremely cold nights. That will keep the water circulating and keeping it from freezing. If they do freeze, call out an expert. I've heard the stories, and I've seen the reports where people will try and thaw their own pipes, and they'll just use that blowtorch for just a little bit on the pipes, and next thing you know, they don't realize it, but they've caught some insulation on fire or something like that, and it catches their house on fire. So that's the main things inside of the house. Do you have any other things that you think we need to talk about for being safe inside the house? But I guess we'll move on along to someday you're going to want to try and get out of that house and go travel. Cabin fever will happen. So I'd like to emphasize to people to, first off, make sure your car is ready for the trip in the wintertime. Summertime, you might be a bit uncomfortable if the car breaks down. You'll be hot and sweaty. Well, it's a matter of life or death in the wintertime, especially with the extreme cold we get. So start with those tires. There is a very small amount of tire that is going to be making contact to the road surface. Make sure that they're good tires for the wintertime and that you got enough tread to be able to help you make it through the snow. So start off with those. You can use the penny check to make sure that at least part of the head of a Lincoln penny is covered. Or take it to an expert is probably the better way to do it, to make sure you have the right tires and that they're at the right level. The next thing is you don't want to go out and do all that Christmas shopping, buying me all of those great presents, and then not be able to take them home because your battery isn't working. So, garages and many of the parts stores can do a battery check to make sure that your battery's not on its last life. And also, while they're in there, they can check the belts to make sure that as you're driving along, you don't get that check engine light because your serpentine belt has given out. After you've looked at those sorts of things, then start looking at the fluids. One really important fluid is your windshield wiper fluid, because we are going to have slush and you're going to want to clear it away. So make sure you've got windshield wiper fluid, plenty of it, and that it's rated for below zero, because otherwise all you're going to do is create more ice on your windshield out there. Go along with that is, if your windshield wiper blades are 5 years old or something like that, or every time you use them you got that big streak right at eye level, invest the money. Go ahead and get some new windshield wiper blades, because being able to see out ahead of you, especially in the snow, is one of the best ways to keep yourself from getting into an accident. And last thing is your spare tire. When was the last time you checked the air pressure on your spare tire?
Never.
Yeah, it's hidden away. They actually need more pressure than the tires that are on your car normally. Get in there. You're going to probably have to buy a special air pressure gauge for it because they're sitting up at 60 to 80 PSI. Get it checked so that you're not stranded out there because you have a tire go bad on you. So that's the mechanical parts of it. Now, we're going to move inside of the car. Make sure that you got a windshield scraper inside that car so that you can see clearly. Don't do the porthole driving, just scraping a little tiny window to look out of. Clean that entire windshield, or else somebody's going to come from that side where you had that little bit of ice on there. And another important thing is, even if you dress well, and my grandmother used to say, dress like you're going to walk to wherever you're going to go, but maybe you're going to be taking guests in your car and they're not as sensible as you are. So I have some extra gloves and hats and blankets, things like that, so that if you do get stuck, that you can stay in that car and stay warm. So another item is a collapsible shovel, so that if you kind of get yourself stuck, you'll be able to get your shovel it away enough to get you going. But don't believe that you're going to be able to get your car across that big pile of snow. You're most likely going to get your car hung up because it'll get the snow underneath the frame. But one of those collapsible shovels can be pretty good for that. That last thing is, you didn't listen to me, you didn't go get your battery checked, and now it's dead. Well, if you got a pair of jumper cables in your car and you know how to use them properly, then you can get your car going and get yourself to the AutoZone or any other place like that, and you can get a new battery in there. So if you want to, you're not going to die of starvation while you're there, but maybe some high-energy food to try and make it a little bit less comfortable. And I've got on here, a cell phone charger. Why do you think a cell phone charger is probably one of the most important things to have?
No one can find you if you don't have one. I have an issue where I don't keep my phone charged, and the charger's at home. And it's something that some of the things that we're talking about, I'm really looking at and going, well, I don't, this is something I need to do in the future. And that's one thing. I think that's a huge safety issue. If I'm stuck and I do not have the ability to go walking out for miles, if it's too cold, then I need to have my phone working.
Exactly right. That will reduce the amount of time you're unpleasant, because if you can get a phone call off to a friend, if need be, even if you have to call 911 to get somebody out there, you're not going to be able to do that if you don't have a charged phone. So, and we never think about that. Every time you walk out the door in the wintertime and you're going to be driving, hopefully you have at least a half a charge. But having a charger in your car and sufficient gas to run your car to charge up your phone is the other aspect. So don't leave your don't start a trip with less than a half of tank of gas on there. So, and even before you head out, you got to think to yourself, is this trip worth it? Go ahead and get on the 511 site, which is the Iowa DOT road conditions site. And if it's shown that the roads are questionable, really think to yourself, is this really worthwhile to go to? If you do take that trip, let somebody know that you're starting out. Give them a call when you get there so that if you should be maybe knocked unconscious, that they know to have somebody search that route that you told them that you were going to take to get there. Turn those lights on in the snow. Don't go bright at night when it's snowing out, but make yourself visible and constantly look out ahead. Your stopping time when it's icy out there is 2, 3, 4 times as long. Make sure that you're looking not at the car ahead of you, but the car, 3 cars ahead of them. So if you see brake lights on that car, you can start braking to make sure. One last thing is, when do you decide to leave the car if you get stuck in the ditch out in the countryside? What are your thoughts on that?
I guess it would depend on what type of clothing I had. So if I had this list in front of me, I would be prepared. But it depends on the distance that you're at. And then also, if you're able to get a hold of someone that can come and get you, which requires your cell phone working, there's many different factors. And you also talked about one thing that I never thought about, which was, well, I'll just stay in my car and keep it running. And someone might come in a couple hours. And you talked about if there was some snow in the pipes, and I'm not good with vehicles, but that it actually could make you sick,
right,
and hurt you.
I had some college mates that died due to carbon monoxide. Again, it's carbon monoxide. The car's running. It's producing carbon monoxide. If the tailpipe gets clogged, then there's a chance it can back up inside of the car. So keep that clear. Just a little crack on the windows. It's counterintuitive. You're trying to stay warm. But that fresh air is absolutely essential. And like you said, if you've done this stuff, you'll have a cell phone. People will know where you're at, and they're going to come and get you. You're probably safest being in the car. If you can see exactly where you're going to go and you know that there's going to be somebody there, maybe that's a time. But overall, you're probably safer staying in the car if you should get stuck.
That's good advice. It's Keith Morgan here from Story County Emergency Management. Thanks for joining us, Keith. Do you have any parting thoughts?
No, I just appreciate this opportunity to be able to get a few tidbits out there to folks so that they can be safer in the wintertime.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen. We just heard from Keith Morgan with a lot of good advice for staying safe in the winter. Keith is just one of the monthly guests who comes to KHOI to increase community awareness. We hope you've learned some useful things from these guests, and we want to express our appreciation for them. You can express your appreciation by becoming a member. It's easy. Just go to our website, khoifm.org, and click the yellow Become a Member button. There are several choices. But now, in honor of Veterans Day, we have Chris McClure here with us to tell that khoifm.org website kept him in touch with home when he was overseas. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I should just mention that the McClure family is really contributing a lot to Local Talk today. Cynthia is our engineer, as she is every Monday. So thanks to both of you.
Thanks.
Well, we're glad to be here.
You are a veteran, which is why we thought it would be especially good for you to come in today. Which branch of the service were you in?
Well, funny that you ask, because I was in most of them.
What's that mean?
Well, when I was 18, I joined the Air Force, and I served almost 4 years active duty. And then, long story short, I joined the Marines, and I was 4 years in the Marines. And then after a couple-year break, I joined the Army National Guard.
So that's quite a shift. Why did you leave the Air Force to join the Marines?
When I was 17, I really wanted to join the Marines. But because my Air Force, or my father was Air Force, he had something against the Marines, and he didn't want a sign for me to go in the Marines when I was 17. So I that's why I went in the Air Force. It was Air Force or nothing for him. But if I would have waited, I would have done anything I wanted to anyway. So, but I joined the Marines after the Air Force because I didn't really get the sort of challenge that I really needed from the Air Force.
So were you ever on active duty in either of those?
Yes. Yes, I was active duty for both.
And where did you go?
Well, for my Air Force days, I was mostly at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. And then in the Marines, I was actually on the go a lot, including time in Okinawa and in the Philippines and on the USS Carl Vinson. And then at Suda Bay, Crete, for my last year of duty in the Marines.
Wow, you were really all over.
Yes. And, and as much as I loved it, I also was starting to get tired of it, though. I wanted to go to college and settle down.
So, and that's what you that's what you did. But then you got into the National Guard?
Well, yes, because of the fact that I kind of missed military life. And not only that, the benefits and a little bit of extra pay sure helped, because at that time I was in the process of getting married. And, of course, in the, in such a situation, every dollar counts.
Yeah.
But also, on the weekends, I got to do things that I really enjoyed, including having the camaraderie of fellow soldiers.
Yes. I guess that's one of the things that we'll be talking about in another program is the American Legion. And I guess that you're an active member.
I am.
That's for another day. But we're talking today about how KHOI kept you in touch with people here.
Well, first of all, my history with KHOI actually goes back to when I had come back from my deployment that I was on in 2010, 2011. And when I came home in 2011, Cynthia was actively participating with this radio station even before it went on air. And I was really happy that she found something that she really enjoyed. And so I'm glad that I was able to help out in a more of an auxiliary sort of way throughout the past several years, ever since it came on air, well over 7 years ago.
Well, I think we ought to say when we did come on air, there were some months that we were unable to broadcast directly, so we had to take our thumb drive out to the computer.
She was part of the original thumb drive crew.
Yes. Actually, it was flash drive crew.
Flash drive,
insider joke for KHOI.
Oh, yes, right.
So fast forward to about 3 years ago when I went on my last deployment with my Army Reserve unit, and one of the ways that I was able to connect with home was that from time to time, maybe about once a week, I would log on to the KHOIFM.org website and to click around to see the different programs, including the occasional local talk and Democracy Now, and as well as the music programs.
I don't know whether Cynthia was on air much then. Were you?
Yeah, I was. I was doing local talk at the time.
You were actually a part of the local talk team.
Collecting stories and things like that. And then I found my niche helping other Iowans create their shows. So now I do a lot of behind-the-scenes creativity with Paul Lundy on his Maximum Polka and Trivia. And then I help with Carol Horowitz, Curtain Up. Her and Roger Berger produce that. It's a Broadway Musicals and More show. I help Roger Berger with his opera show on Sundays, and Carol Horowitz is going to have on Thursday, every other Thursday, she does KHOI Previews the Arts, and I also keep uploading BJ's shows. She passed away, she was a contributor here, and she had Evening with Elizabeth, and, you know, just help out. I bring a lot of food here when we're having a party. Like when Paul's memorial happened, Paul Nelson, who was our chief engineer and helped us, in immeasurable ways. I mean, I think this guy put IKEA furniture together for fun because he was a very technically minded individual. But he was also a great musician and a very talented engineer, and he created our tower connection. Because he helped us get out of the flash drive crew, and it was not an easy task.
I think he truly was a Renaissance man.
Yes, definitely a Renaissance man. He loved food and people and music, and he loved engineering. Anyway, just there's a lot of things that go on, and a lot of challenges happen at the station, and there's a lot of niches here for people, and I found mine. So,
you're just explaining how you put community in community radio.
Pretty much.
And I truly believe that KHOI is an invaluable tool for bringing our community together to let people know what's happening in their broader community. And not just Ames, but we reach out all the way up to Webster City, down to the northern reaches of Ankeny, out to Boone.
Mm-hmm. I've heard us in Dowse.
Wow.
Which is like, you know, well, I can pick us up in that's north. And then I've heard us in Greene County. I mean, and right before you get to Marshalltown.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we go, depending on the topography, we go, you know, if it's flat, we go a long way.
Well, normally that's my specialty on Wednesday.
You're like a roving reporter for all the news
so
in the hinterland.
This truly is for the heart of Iowa, not just Ames.
That's right.
But this is part of the glue that holds and brings the community together.
I think it does.
And it's important because right now we're trying to raise monies to keep the station, keep the lights on. I mean, I'm a volunteer, and for a lot that I do.
We have only one full-time paid staff, and that's our operations manager who keeps it.
That's Eric, yeah.
That's Eric.
So
And even Ursula is only sort of part-time. She works full-time for Pacifica, but she's more volunteer hours.
Yes,
than
I know. But, yeah, we need you to become a sustaining member. So go to khoifm.org and click on the donate button and sign us up.
And even if you don't think that donation is maybe the right word, think about it as an investment. You are investing in your community. You're helping to make it a place that you want to be a part of. So aligning your values with your pocketbook.
Well said, dear.
Well said. Well, thank you so much. That was great, Chris. And I know that you have a math class to get to.
Well, there are several local organizations serving breakfast and meals throughout the day for veterans, and I plan to participate in one of them at Hy-Vee.
You got to show your military ID and go get a free meal.
I think the haircut might let me in.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Dear. You're welcome. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks. This is a local talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've just been talking with Chris McClure, who was telling us how KHOI kept him in touch with home during his deployment in Kuwait. Now he's off to teach at DMAC and have breakfast. Thanks for coming in, and drive safely.
Will do.
It's time to announce our first Pantorium session of the month, which is tonight from 7 to 8 p.m., and we have Reggie Greenlaw here to tell us about it.
I was invited to come for tonight with just a fair assortment of just my own stuff, and a lot of people are being requested to show up, lots of friends. Anybody who's in the neighborhood, please come in and watch the concert.
And is it going to be broadcast?
Yes, it'll be broadcast live. It'll be streaming. And I have two very good friends and very good musicians who will be accompanying me, Kurt Snook, who worked WOI Radio, is a very good Malay instrumentalist. It's always good to surround yourself with people who are better musicians than you are. And others, Steve Hurst, who is a very good Malay instrumentalist. He plays guitar and mandolin and is with several groups. We play several genres of music, but there's some original music thrown in the mix as well.
Okay. So do you have a song for us, Reggie?
Yes, I do. I just brought one in that I'll be performing tonight. It has to do with a headline that I found several years ago, and it was wonderful. It was the world's best headline. It said, "World's Tallest Man Saves Two Dolphins." And I loved it because it couldn't possibly be what I thought it was, but it turned out it was. In China, in an aquarium in Beijing, the two dolphins were failing to thrive, in fact dying, and nobody knew why for a while. They brought in a veterinarian. The veterinarian examined them and found that they'd been eating pieces of the lining of the pool, and the pieces were getting caught in the esophagus of each of the dolphins, and they weren't able to eat. They didn't know what to do. The veterinarian did not have proper tools or good tools to extract these shards of plastic. So he didn't know. He was just watching them fail and fail, and somebody came up with an idea. He said, "I know what we'll do. The world's tallest man lives in the middle of China, and we can probably get him in here. He probably has the world's tallest fingers. We might be able to extract the pieces using his very long fingers." And they thought, well, sure, let's try it. So they got the world's tallest man to come in from Mongolia, and it worked. They opened the dolphins' mouths. He reached in with his world's longest fingers and extracted all the pieces from the dolphins, and they were saved. So the song doesn't have a lot to do with that, except that it has to do with the world's tallest man. I just speculated on what it would be like to be a gigantic human being, and it was just kind of a fun experiment. So this is the world's tallest man. He wakes up in the morning, he opens his eyes. When he stands up, he's the first one to see the sunrise. When he walks out in the morning time glow, the whole world is way far below. He takes giant steps when he walks every day, and you can see him when he's coming from a long ways away. He stands closer to heaven than most of us get, but when the rain falls, he's the first to get wet. And who knows what he's thinking up in the air. I wonder if it ever gets lonesome up there. And I wonder how it all looks from up where he stands, how it looks to the world's tallest man. He's not much for pets, though he had a few cats who spent their days sleeping in the world's biggest hat. Though he's shy around folks, he'll stand next to the trees, 'cause he likes things that are bigger than he is. And he's closer to his friends when he's sitting down. They sit on their chairs while he sits on the ground. But when he stands up, well, they all go away. And he wonders why no one can stay. And who knows what he's thinking up in the air. I wonder if it ever gets lonesome up there. And I wonder how it all looks from up where he stands, how it looks to the world's tallest man. So when the night comes and it's time for bed, he lay down and the moon will roll over his head. Where he'll count stars and he'll wonder as some rise and fall, but you can't touch them even if you're real tall. And who knows what he's thinking up in the air. I wonder if it ever gets lonesome up there. I wonder how it all looks from up where he stands, how it looks to the world's tallest man. How it looks to the world's tallest man.
That's a lovely song, Reggie.
Thank you.
And very thought-provoking. But yeah, that's true for a lot of your songs. Now, is this the first Pantorium session you've sung?
This is my first Pantorium. For no particular reason, I've always wanted to come down here and perform, and now I have a chance, so I'm pretty excited. A lot of good people here.
As our listeners probably know, this is the beginning of our fall fund drive, and the Pantorium sessions are always a part of that. We do Pantorium sessions once a month anyway, but during this 2 weeks, we'll be having a lot more. You're the first, though. You're the very first of the Pantorium sessions.
Excited about that.
So this is a chance for your radio audience to become familiar with more of your songs because, of course, this show will be broadcast live at 7 p.m. From 7 to 8, the regular slot for local talk. But we're happy to be able to offer a special bonus for those who listen in the morning. They can listen in the evening and hear you.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of excited about that. It'll be fun. My friends and I don't perform on the radio very often, and we are looking forward to a chance to have that kind of venue, and a lot of people should be showing up to listen, and we'll be able to offer a couple of extra songs too probably after we're being recorded for those who show up.
Well, so this is a very special invitation to our listeners, and we hope that many of our listeners are already members, but if you are, consider chipping in just a little bit more for keeping us on the air.
Absolutely. You're a good operation, and you've had a lot of good people come through, and we're getting information here that we wouldn't get from other stations. It's greatly appreciated.
Thanks, Reggie. Mm-hmm. And anything you want to add?
Can't think much. Please come down and listen, though. We'd love to perform for you, and KHOI, we've been friends of you guys for a long time, and we're expecting this still to be in its germination stage. I think the station will continue to thrive, flourish, as long as people in the community are willing to give it an ear. And maybe a few coins.
Yes, yes. Yes. And dollar bills and large checks are also welcome.
Correct. Why not?
You can come to our website, khoifm.org, and look for – now we have a special – become a member button, not just a donate button, but a member button that people can push and fill it out. And, of course, those of you who come to the Pentorium session are going to be stopping into the station tonight. So you might be inspired with that to chip in a little more.
Yeah, we might help you remember when you come down.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Reggie. Looking forward to hearing you tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yep, same here. This is going to be a great time, Susan. Thank you.
Hey, bye-bye. Mm-hmm. You've been listening to KHOI Local Talk. As regular listeners know, my usual co-host is Paul Wearson, who usually drives in from Story City for our 7 a.m. local talk program on Wednesday. But today, when he was going to come in because it's a Veterans Day program, he can't be here because he's laid up with a cold. But the phones still work, and he's been helping me figure out how to put together this Veterans Day program. As usual, he had some stories and news from the Roland Story area. Fortunately, he's well enough to talk, and our phones still work. Are you snowed in up there on your farm, Paul?
No, I could get out if I wanted to. And I am going over to the Veterans Day observance over at the middle school. I hope I'm not going to give anybody any illness. I'm just sort of fighting off a cold. I'm pretty mobile, but we do have snow up here at the farm, and nothing like they have down south. They're really getting some snow down there, 4 inches. We don't have that here, but I'm looking forward to about 10 o'clock today, and this is what I really want to let the audience know about. It's this marvelous Veterans Day observance at the middle school. It's really wonderful because every eighth grader at the middle school interviews a veteran, and they put together a poster about that person's career in the military. And so when you go into the cafeteria, all the walls are lined with these posters. And, of course, the veteran takes that home with them after the celebration. And there's coffee and donuts and refreshments. And then you're ushered into the gym where the band performs and the chorus sings. And they have skits and patriotic readings. And I remember a few years ago, they had a scene on stage. It was a World War II barracks. And you had these kids who have been born in this century, you know, talking about things like snafu and all the terms from World War II. And the band played Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree with Anyone Else But Me. And it was marvelous, and it is every year. And they actually, someone's waiting for you. They can park your car. One of the kids ushers you into the area where you're going to have refreshments, and well, they treat you like an absolute king, you know. And then the American Legion, the color guard, marches in. So it's a very, very patriotic day. And what I really like is the emphasis of the staff in teaching the kids, apart from their history textbook, what this means, you know, the Veterans Day observance. And they get into a real conversation with the veterans individually and put that poster together. So, and that's not all. At Christmas, and you've been to this dinner with me, Susan, they usher you in there too, and there's valet parking and a full meal. The students eat sack lunches, but they serve all us elderly people whatever was for school lunch that day, and it's pretty good too. And of course, there's Christmas carols, the band, and the chorus, and the kids are serving you. They're just all over you. They can't help you enough. And I even pretend to be more difficulty in movement than I am so that I can walk out on someone's arm. They usher you out to your car, too. So basically, you're talking about middle school. I think it's one of the best things I've seen in our system because the kids learn. And they give, they share, they make sure this event happens. And everyone at the school, to the cooks, to the principal, is involved in both of these activities. And so I'm looking forward to getting over there today. And you can't keep me down from driving 6 miles on E18 to get to Roland.
Oh, no. Well, as we were talking about this program, I was recalling that originally, it was Armistice Day.
because it was the end of the war to end all wars. That was the slogan, the war to end all wars. And you have a story about that celebration, the original first Armistice Day celebration up in Story City. Paul, what is that?
My mother was born in 1906. She was going to school in those days, of course. And my grandfather, her father, was a flamboyant businessman in Story City. He was very visible. He was one of the people who put together the tradition of our big Christmas tree we still have every year in the city square. And he had said that if we beat the Kaiser, he had a big walrus-type mustache, and he was famous for that. And he said if we beat the Kaiser, he would shave that off in public by the city barber in celebration of that victory. Well, my mother was going to school, and all the kids were coming the other way. Celia, there's a big party uptown, and everyone gathered uptown, and they had Kaiser's coffin, you know. And then my grandfather, Oscar, had his mustache ceremoniously shaved off right in front of everybody. That was one of her great memories, you know. And we just have to get in touch with the fact that that war had no precedent. You know, it was a horrible war for the combat troop because it was trench warfare. And we know how miserable things were in the Western Front. And so basically you're talking about a tradition that's grown from Armistice Day, and I think sometime in the 50s they made sure it was called Veterans Day, and so it enlarges to celebrating veterans of all wars that came after World War One. So basically you're talking about a tradition that started particularly about one war that grew into a general celebration, and I'm glad that happened too.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your memories, Paul, and for being with us to end this Veterans Day program.
Well, Susan, it's a pleasure, and I hope everybody remembers today the sacrifices that have been made by our neighbor boy across the road was killed in Korea. My best friend died in a helicopter crash in Vietnam, and it's time to memorialize those people and also thank a veteran for the service they provided in whatever war it was and in whatever way they served.
Well, thank you so much, Paul. And I'll hope to see you soon on Local
Very
Talk.
Good. Well, we'll be back on the air downtown in Ames soon. And
okay. Well,
don't forget, everybody out there, it's time to contribute to KHOI and keep us alive and kicking for all the things we do. And we're proud of what we accomplished, and we're so happy that we have listeners and loyal people who make things happen for us.
Thank you. Enjoy the Veterans Day program in Roland.
I'm about to be treated like a king.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host for today, Susan Franzen. Other voices you heard were Dennis Hart, Stephanie Bates, Keith Morgan, Chris McClure, Reggie Greenlaw, and Paul Wearson. You can listen to today's Local Talk and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you'll also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. Today's show will be rebroadcast at noon, but not at 7 p.m., because at 7 p.m., listen in for Reggie Greenlaw and friends at the Pantorium session, or come in to the 410 Douglas and be part of the studio listening audience. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Your Country and Mine by Irving Berlin, and World's Tallest Man, performed live by Reggie Greenlaw. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member, or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button, or if you're a new member, the become a member button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make AKHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by Iowa State Center, presenting Ailey 2 at C.Y. Stevens, merging the spirit and energy of young dance talent with the passion and creative vision of emerging choreographers. November 13th at 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center@iastate.edu.